Hello and welcome to NatSec Tech, a podcast from the Special Competitive Studies Project. I'm Jean Meserve. We're recording this episode at the SCSP AI Plus Expo at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. It's great to have you with us, whether you're here in the room or listening to a recording online. We often talk about national policy towards emerging technology on this podcast, but we have never looked at it from the state perspective. Now we will. Joining me is Margaret Woolley Bussey, Executive Director of the Utah Department of Commerce, which has opened an Office of AI Policy and Regulatory Landscape. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here, team.
So it makes perfect sense to me that states would want to compete for business. It means jobs. It means tax revenue. If the company's exceptionally successful, it brings prestige to the state. But Utah was the first state to establish an office like this dealing with AI. Was pursuit of economic development the real impetus for this?
Well, you know, it was really twofold. So as you'll recall, when ChatGPT really released its first, or OpenAI released its first ChatGPT to the public, there was just an amazing sort of reaction, right? That encapsulated both the anxieties of what might be our future and the possibilities. There were both of those emotions just churning around strongly. And set against Utah, which really has two dynamics that I want to just mention. One is that Utah has a thriving tech sector. It's what sometimes we call it Silicon Slopes after the mountains that we have in Utah, really burgeoning sector there. We also are a big family state, so we care about what happens to our kids. And so I think those two things combined us to want to do something that would sort of recognize the reasons behind the anxiety and the excitement, if that makes sense.
So what exactly does the office do?
Yeah, so what we did with the office is we knew we wanted to achieve three objectives with our AI policy. The first was we wanted to make sure we were encouraging innovation to that point about being a big tech hub. Economic opportunity that you mentioned previously. We also wanted to make sure we're protecting the public. We know the harms that came from social media. Utah was one of the first states, was the first state to regulate social media and to protect minors. But we also, in addition to those two things, we wanted to build a function within government that could actively observe and learn. And this is really key because we know things are changing so rapidly. We can't just sort of do something one time and be done. And so that's what those were the objectives that we were trying to achieve with this office. The office has two functions. The first function is a regulatory mitigation function, if you will. Sounds kind of boring. Some people will be familiar with the concept of a regulatory sandbox, which is what this really is. It enables AI companies to come to the office and say, hey, I've got this great idea, but I'm going to bump up into this regulation. And so the office can work with that company and work with the relevant regulators to say, we're going to exempt you from this law, or we're going to at least mitigate penalties if something goes awry. And that, again, it encourages innovation. It allows companies to want to come to Utah. So that's the first part of it.
Does that undermine the whole point of regulation when you do that?
Well, so this is, I guess, sort of the point, right? The idea is that we have a lot of regulations out there that never contemplated the use of generative AI. So for instance, we regulate about 500,000 people in the state of Utah in their professions, right? Doctors, lawyers, construction workers, and a lot of those folks or a lot of those kinds of services may be disrupted with generative AI. So for instance, with mental health, right? There's all these mental health chatbots now. Well, right now in the state of Utah, if you want to practice mental health, you have to be a person with a license. That law, that regulation never contemplated that a generative AI type product could do that. So that's, and I'll actually come back to that mental health piece because that's where our first regulatory mitigation agreement arrived. But the second function of the office is to run what we call a learning lab, which is really a way for us to proactively take on issues that we're seeing in the moment of where there is harm happening. And then either harm or places where regulation needs to be updated or cleared out or restructured. And so this office can work with stakeholders, bring them in, come up with solutions, make recommendations to Congress, to our legislature.
So who are the stakeholders who are represented? It may vary, of course, from case to case.
Yes.
But for instance, are civil liberties organizations represented? Are parents groups represent
100%. And we did a lot of this as we were building out our social media laws. So we kind of are familiar with a lot of the folks there. But for instance, so our very first learning lab topic was actually that topic, the mental health chatbots. We know there's all these sort of privacy ramifications when you're putting in a chatbot your most sensitive things about you. And we know that typically the business models tend to be collecting your data, selling it, and serving you up targeted ads. And we didn't want that to happen in this space. So we recommended that that not happen. But we did create a pathway for innovators where we said, if you follow these best practices, our Division of Professional Licensing, which is enforces the mental health licensing, won't go after you for an unlicensed practice. So that was kind of the first thing we recommended to our legislature, and it just passed that law this past February. But to your point about stakeholders, in crafting that recommendation to the legislature, we brought in the mental health community, because this affects them profoundly. We also brought in libertarian groups that don't like regulation at all. And then we brought in parents groups, like you said, that care about what might be happening to their kids. So it was a whole slew of different stakeholders.
So you mentioned that this legislation has been passed. Maybe it's too soon, but has anybody started practicing mental health online in Utah as a result of this?
They have, actually. And one of the things that actually informed this this approach was our first regulatory mitigation agreement was with a mental health chatbot. So in being able to study what they were doing, it helped to inform us for the actual recommendation that we made to the legislature. And in the meantime, we gave them mitigation. We said, we're not going to go after you for unlicensed practice because we know you're following these careful guardrails to keep people safe.
Are you going to be tracking this over time to see how it works?
Yes, exactly. So the idea is that the office continues to observe and track whatever companies are within this regulatory sandbox that we've created. And that becomes, again, it helps us to observe and learn what's going on, where we need to either clear out regulation, again, restructure or put in new to manage this very new technology.
So mental health was a big, big issue to take on. Do you know what's next? What is your learning lab going to take on?
Yes. So we're right now finishing up our learning agenda on deep fakes and sort of what to do about deep fakes.
And when you figure it out, inform every other state in the federal government,
and
please.
And we can talk about that if you want. And then as soon as we're done with that, we're going to move on to AI companions. So you've probably seen some press around some of the harms that are coming from that. Also could be great opportunities. So our approach is always to figure out how do we enable innovation around that with appropriate guardrails.
How do you set the priorities?
We look around and sort of see where we're seeing present harm or where we're seeing technology not able to take root because of existing guardrails. So another one we'll likely do after we finish the AI companions learning agenda is data in healthcare. So right now, data is very, very heavily regulated at the federal level, right? And some at the state level as well. But there's some really interesting questions on, and we want to keep people's data private 100%. Like, I'm so committed to that. The question is, how can we use data in maybe a different way that can still be able to help our research scientists unlock these amazing connections to be able to get to groundbreaking therapeutics, right? And right now, HIPAA is very strict. So the question is, can we do something around synthetic data, which is data generated from real data, but it's fake, but it has the same characteristics of that same data, so you can do research off of it. So we want to look at that, where we might need to clear out some guardrails or restructure some things so that we can unlock the potential.
You mentioned deepfakes, such a hot issue right now. Do you have any sense of the pathway you might find here?
Well, I think there's some interesting technologies out there that exist today and that some companies are actually starting to adopt that basically, you know how if you take a picture on your digital camera or on your phone, it'll basically give you a little stamp of when it was taken and even where, right? So that data is embedded in there. And so the concept that some companies are already implementing is that when you maybe hover over, say, an image and you're trying to understand, is it totally real? Has it been enhanced with AI? It'll actually give you that information. So it's kind of like provenance data. And the question is, how technologically feasible is that for any company to do? And then where should we start requiring that for certain sectors? Maybe not across the board, but maybe in government, just to help people trust government more if we're ever using it so people know. Or maybe in a place like the insurance industry, where there's actually a lot of deep fakes that people are using to defraud insurance companies. They're saying, hey, I got in this big accident. Look at this picture of my car, and it's completely fake, right? So there could be some targeted places that we might require something like that, where we see that deep fakes are doing harm.
I've talked to officials from other countries. Estonia springs to mind, where they have government has harnessed AI to deliver services more efficiently and effectively to the citizens. Is that something you're looking at? How the state of Utah might expand its use of AI to the advantage of citizens?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the whole state government is looking at this. We have our Division of Technology Services is sort of leading the charge on this and how it can be deployed most effectively. In our agency, we have all sorts of ways that we're starting to deploy AI. And the question is how to do it well in a way that citizens trust the government, because that's the key here. If they feel like they're being manipulated by anything that has to do with AI or otherwise, that's a huge problem. And that's why I actually think starting with that provenance type technology within government could be a really good place to do it, because that's where people have the most trouble trusting.
So the mission, as I understand it, is to try and balance innovation against protection. Do you think you're actually finding the sweet spot there?
I think, you know, it's really early still. We really just started to stand up this office just a year ago. And, you know, we did our first learning agenda, made the recommendations to the legislature on the mental health chatbot issue. We've gotten a ton of really, really great feedback on that law, and as well as the law that created the Office of AI Policy. It's being lauded by libertarian and conservative groups as being an approach that is acceptable. And I think that's important. Right now, as you might know, Congress is contemplating a 10-year moratorium.
Definitely something I want to ask you about.
So on state-level AI regulation. And I think that's a reaction to some of the really, some of the states that have come down really hard and focused on foundational models. That's not our focus. We're trying to find that balance and a model that can work, that allows us to continually learn, to give the citizens confidence that we're on it, we're looking at it, we're creating a responsible guardrails, but we're also allowing these pathways for innovation.
So we don't know where that legislation will stand by the time this podcast airs. But at the moment, as you mentioned, there are provisions saying no more state regulation of AI. Things that are in effect shouldn't be enforced. What is your position on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we would say that we're not for it. We think it was sort of a way to deal with, again, some states that may be taking a heavier hand. But I don't think that's the right approach. First of all, from a federalism standpoint, I think it is the state's prerogative to regulate certain types of things that they can and things that may harm their citizens. But second of all, because I think it's a great opportunity for the federal government to learn what's working and what's not working as everyone's trying to come together and figure out what the right solutions are.
But is it confusing for the tech companies to have a patchwork of regulations across the 50 states?
I think it definitely could be confusing for the tech companies. But I think that is, you know, all the better that we need to figure out what the right solutions are. States are coming up with solutions. I think this is a moment in time where The federal government should be razor focused on what the right solutions are and get those learnings from the states. I also think that one solution could be that they say, look, we as the federal government are going to regulate how foundational models work, but the states are free to regulate other pieces of this, really like the effects of it, like what we've done with mental health chatbots. So we're not saying we're going to regulate what, you know, Gemini or Anthropic are doing and those foundational models. Instead, we're saying, look at how what the effects could be or are from the use of AI on our people. And that's where we're going to focus. And I think that might be a good way to divide up the jurisdiction.
Technology changes at an amazing clip. The technology that's current today will be outdated in 2 months. Can you possibly keep up with that? I would think it would be tremendously labor intensive.
We won't be able to keep up with all of it. But I think that sentiment is what's caused some people and even policymakers to sort of throw up their hands and say, we don't even know what to do. And it's moving so fast, so we can't even do anything. And I don't think that serves our citizens either. And so that's why we said, well, we can do something. And we can stand up this office so that we have some really smart people that are looking at this every single day. And we can't do it all, but we can do something, and we can create a model for other states to follow. And many other states are starting to follow this. It's been model legislation. And so, yeah, we can't do it all. And we're never going to be able to keep up entirely, right? But we can put into place ways that we can observe and learn and be proactive about it and find pathways for innovation with responsible guardrails.
What has the response from industry been?
I think at least in the Utah ecosystem, they've actually really loved this approach because they've seen other states that have taken a heavier hammer or states that aren't doing anything, which leaves them with total uncertainty. Part of the issue here is regulatory certainty that companies need. And that's what we're trying to provide both through passing responsible laws, but also this idea of the regulatory mitigation so they can proceed knowing that they're not going to have a heavy hammer come down on them.
Have you attracted new AI companies to Utah because of this?
Well, interestingly enough, I was just on a trade mission with our governor, Governor Spencer Cox, to Canada. They're doing really incredible research with AI. But we were talking to some of their companies there and talked a little bit about our approach in Utah. And we just had a follow-up call from a major AI company that now wants to set up headquarters in Utah because of what we're doing. So absolutely, this is a way for us to attract AI companies.
So you mentioned other states are looking at what you're doing.
Yeah.
So are they replicating, modifying? Do you have a sense
yeah,
of that?
So yeah, there are some other states that have reached out to some of our legislators to find out more. I know Texas is in the process of passing something quite similar. I know Pennsylvania reached out to us. We're getting the word out in a lot of different ways, a lot of different legislative convenings that, you know, convene state legislators. It's ALEC, which is a sort of right-leaning convener of state legislators. It's model legislation for ALEC. NCSL is very interested. We're going to be speaking at NCSL to talk through it. So I think a lot of states are looking at it as a really balanced approach.
Do you think that lawmakers, either at the state level or the federal level, have the understanding of AI that they need to have to deal with this issue effectively?
This is such an important point. I'm so glad you brought it up. I have a strong belief that we need more technologists in government. And I think that's been a hole that has gone on for too long. We have a lot of economists in government. My background is economics as well. And I love that. But we need people that fundamentally understand these technologies. And so when I was looking whom to hire to run this office, my first instinct was like, oh, I'll get another, you know, a strong policy person. And then I realized, you know, we do a lot of policy. I can do a lot of policy. We have legislators that do policy. We need somebody that deeply understands these technologies. So I hired actually an applied mathematics professor from one of our universities, from Brigham Young University, to come run the office, who understands this. You know, he does AI research. And he hired another scholar from Dartmouth and some other folks that have that deep technology expertise And I think that's why government was sort of slow on, for instance, doing anything about social media, because people just didn't fundamentally understand how they were using their business models for technology's purposes, or really how they were using technology for the business models purposes that were exploitative, in my view. So I think it's important. Not every legislator is going to have this expertise. Most don't. We do have some in Utah that have some pretty good expertise. We've got an engineer in our legislature, and so that they've been interested in these issues and are promoting these issues. We have a guy who used to work for Google, so he understands these issues really well. And I think that's important. But you don't have to have be a PhD in math to be able to understand the effects of AI. So
I have read that your office has said, we can't regulate what we can't understand. I just want you to know that the U.S. Congress does it all the time.
Letting me in on a dirty little secret. Got it.
Okay. Margaret Woolley-Bussey, Executive Director of the Utah Department of Commerce. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a really fascinating exercise you have underway in Utah. We'll check back with you in a year or two and see how it's going.
Thanks so much, Gene.
Wonderful.
You've been listening to an episode of NatSec Tech, a podcast from the Special Competitive Studies Project, recorded live at the AI Plus Expo at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. I'm Jean Meserve. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you will again. Take care.